You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Gene Purcell. Still ahead on the show, the state is bracing for an Arctic blast, and we'll tell you how to be prepared and be safe.
Beginning tonight, NPR's On the Media joins the Friday night lineup here on the Ideas Network. In addition to its Sunday morning time slot, you can now hear it right after Central Time on Fridays.
Over the years, On the Media has been highly regarded for its exploration of the vast media landscape, aiming to lift the veil on how the media sausage is made.
Brooke Gladstone is the co-host and managing editor of On the Media. She joins us now to talk about the program and what's ahead for it this coming year. Brooke, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, thanks for having me. And thanks for having me the show at 8 on Friday nights. That's when it's the absolute freshest. And I'm always happy when it shows up on the air just as soon as we make it.
Nice. So you put it to bed on Friday afternoon sometime then.
That's right. Yeah. In fact, we generally post around 6, 7 o'clock, well, 7 or 8 o'clock Eastern time. So you guys are getting it hot off the presses, which is how we do it in New York, as well as various times during the weekend. But it's always my preference that the show never be aired past the weekend. That's my sell-by date.
Well, lots of our listeners are already familiar with On the Media. It's been airing on the weekends here on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering how you think the media landscape has evolved since the show began.
Oh, my God. I mean, we might as well be living on a different planet. When we, when Bob and I first did the show, the big new innovation was DVD extras and director's tracks and things like that. We thought that was just so cool. Listening to that old stuff now, it's like, you know, the 8-track tape I don't know, the buggy whip. I mean, there wasn't any Twitter. There wasn't any Facebook. There, you know, blogs were just beginning to become part of the conversation. I mean, we're talking about 2000, right? You know, it was just not... I mean, when the show had been around since the mid-90s, but it went national in the late 90s, and then Bob and I started at the third millennium and relaunched it and retweaked it and changed its priorities and so on.
Now, as I understand it, you were the first media reporter to be hired by NPR. Did
Right.
you ever expect to see the explosion of media that we see today?
I suppose there are visionaries out there who could have, but I was fresh off of a gig 3 years in Moscow for NPR. And, you know, when I had left in 92, there were only like 3 networks. When I came back, there were 5. You know, the whole situation had changed radically. I had an empty Rolodex. And no, I could not have imagined what has come to pass, how the very definition of media changed, and how the way we interact with it has been completely revolutionized. I mean, there is much of the hysterics about the development of media center around a lot of what has happened many times in the past. Every time there was a new form of media, there was a set of very similar hysterics about it. The thing that is truly new is the fact that it's gone from one too many to many to many. And that's just an entirely different equation that will yield very different results.
Well, and the other aspect of this is that all of the new media we're talking about, it's so tightly wound up with technology, you can't really stay up on one without staying up on the other. And it moves quickly, as we're talking about. You know, my 8-year-old has to tell me how to do stuff these days. Is it challenging for you to keep up with everything you need to know in both the media landscape and technology?
Yes. Thank God I'm not doing the show by myself. In fact, we have a new, essentially it's a blog that has there are new posts twice a day, and then there's a weekly audio component called TLDR, which is internet lingo for too long didn't read. It's about
Right.
things that just take too long to consume. These are short bites that talk all about the culture of life online. It is something that, you know, probes well beyond the gadgetry into what is truly change-worthy about the way that we live, the way that we regard ourselves in as part of the world, as leading a conscious life. There's just incredible things that, and those are done by, I mean, that's run by P.J. Vogt and Alex Goldman, two producers on our staff who are considerably younger than I am. I have been considering taking a coding class, but mostly I try and take the big picture. I mean, even gaming, I did a whole hour on gaming that I loved, but when I tried to game on a old game called EverQuest, one of those, you know, dragon-y, dungeon-y shows, I called myself a gnome named Kreplach, and I fell down. And I could never get up. We even called the people who designed the game. I'm sure Kreplach is still moldering in EverQuest somewhere.
Oh, that's hilarious. Well, as you're keeping an eye on not just the technology, but, you know, the media smorgasbord that's out there each week and you're putting together your show, how do you decide what to focus on every week when there's so much to choose from?
Yeah, this is where a lot of things that aren't explicitly media get squeezed through what I call the on the media Play-Doh extruder so that they come out media shaped, because I'm not interested in media as a topic in itself. Never have been. I consider it a kind of a bizarre strength. I am interested in media insofar as it can tell me about modern life, that it can tell me about human psychology or how we perceive and filter our world. I'm interested in policies and trends insofar as they may affect the way that I see the world or the way that I see myself. So everything has to have important stakes. Everything has to have stakes for the average person who doesn't care about the media so that they can understand why this is important or fascinating for them as people who don't regard themselves as specialists. All this time, I have never seen myself as any more than a curious person who wants to lead a conscious life. And you can't do that without understanding how the news media is created, how it works itself upon you, what the sources of the media are, the biases that work on the media. All of those things help you lead a conscious life and have a hope of trying to extract some nuggets of truth out of all of the ore out there.
Well, that's a pretty mind-blowing thing to say. The host of On the Media is not interested in the media and never has been. Does that?
I know, and actually, I can't believe that I've actually just said that.
on the record,
but,
yeah.
But it is on the record. And the thing is that's because you asked, how do we choose? It's never, hey, this guy is doing something kind of interesting. I mean, my first question is, interesting to whom? Why? What do you care about it? What is the larger story that it tells? And when we're doing our show right, then every single interview, every single piece tells a larger story. We had a great piece that we ran. We did a show devoted to, of all things, intellectual property and copyright last week. You can't, you know, what could be more yawn-worthy than that? But the show was fascinating. And one of the best parts of it was an analysis, a discussion, a history of the song Happy Birthday. And it tells you everything you need to know about what is ridiculous in our intellectual property laws. And it isn't just, wow, you know, every time you sing it, you have to send a dime to somebody. It's not that. It follows, this song follows the history of the evolution of those laws. And it is thus fascinating, because whose life has not, at one point or other, not been touched by the song Happy Birthday?
Well, we're talking right now with Brooke Gladstone. She's co-host and managing editor of NPR's On the Media, and you'll be able to hear On the Media on Fridays at 6 o'clock right after Central Time starting today. And we're welcoming your calls now. How important is it to keep an eye on the media? Do you consider yourself a wise consumer of the media and how it shapes our culture and the lives that we lead? You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're talking with NPR's Brooke Gladstone about the unique challenges facing the media today and her show on the media and how the media culture has changed along with the show.
And we'd like to hear what you think, too. Does journalism today stand up to enough scrutiny? Does journalism have an obligation to hold lawmakers accountable? When you're looking at all of that media ore, how do you find the nuggets in there? Let us know at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can drop us an email, talk@WPR.org. You can also leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Brooke, I want to look at one of the shows that On the Media did, one of the questions it took up that I imagine took a lot of courage. On the Media turned the spotlight on the NPR mothership in a way when it explored whether NPR has a liberal bias. Now, on that show, Ira Glass was on board. You had a political scientist. There was a volunteer listener who was a conservative.
We had a few conservatives.
And you sat down to really consider that question. Mm-hmm. And first off, I wonder what was going through your minds when you decided whether or not to tackle that question. I imagine it took courage.
Well, you know, only because many years ago when I was a trade reporter covering media, believe it or not, I did do it before this job, somebody said, why don't you talk about how NPR is drifting to the right? This was back in, like, the early 1980s. And, it was, I think, a progressive magazine asked me to do it. And I couldn't do it because these measurements are so subjective. So my fear wasn't that, you know, there was going to get any blowback from NPR or from the listeners or even from the right because, let's face it, we're certainly used to that. But it was more just how can we grapple with this when we don't have clear definitions. And so we spent a lot of time talking to the Project for Excellence in Journalism and Pew to try and find out how they define it. And then we took a bunch of conflicting studies and tried to see if we could make some sense out of them. And then we tried to just drop NPR in a continuum, you know, with the New York Times and the Washington Post and Fox News and the Wall Street Journal and CNN, and to see how we, to name a few, and just to see where public radio fit in that continuum. Another thing is that public radio is different from NPR. NPR is a series of programs, and a network and a membership organization. It's a lot of things, but it is not the entire voice of public radio. There are lots of other voices on public radio that do not fall under the aegis of national public radio, and that's a complexity that most listeners don't take on. So we knew that these were going to be very muddy waters, but we also felt that to ignore what was such a talking point, both in Congress and on cable and in papers. Just this, you know, is it, isn't it, should, you know, just ducking it, just sticking your head in the sand isn't going to make it go away. And that was a point that Ira Glass was making. You know, he felt NPR was not addressing this. And we thought, okay, we'll try. And, it took us three programs to come to a kind of fuzzy conclusion that all listeners can draw their own conclusions from. But as human beings, that's what we do anyway.
What kind of response did you get from that?
Shockingly positive. I think it's because we really tried to be honest with ourselves, and we didn't try to stack the deck. Some did not agree with our conclusions. Some weren't happy with some of the studies that we used. Some felt that, you know, we probably shouldn't have engaged with the issue at all because that was giving lots of ammunition to the right. But the fact is that not the right, nor the left, nor the center got incredibly exercised by what we did, and most people appreciated the sincerity of the effort. And we came up with some really interesting information, and we tried to draw some conclusions, but in the end, it's up to every listener to do that, as it always is.
I'm going to go to the phones now. We've got Joe on the line from Prairie du Chien. Hi, Joe.
Hello. I think one of the problems we have is that the public is bypassing the content that is being presented by the reporter and going to directly to their perception of the validity of the data that is being used.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Internet is part of, you know, it. I say problem, but it may be, you know, an opening to a wider approach to how data is used to report the content, as it were.
What sort of data do you mean, Joe? Can you give me an example?
Well, just do we use the government's figures for unemployment, or do we use ADP's?
Uh-huh.
You know, these sort of things. We can, you know, do you trust the source, I guess, is the biggest thing.
Right, yeah. Trust is such a fundamental.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Joe. Let's see what Brooke has to say.
Well, I was just going to tell Joe that, you know, trust is the fundamental problem. You know, there's this famous Moynihan quote, which everybody quotes now, ironically, in the current media era. He was a distinguished senator from New York some years ago, and he once said, everyone is entitled to their own opinions, but not to their own facts. And, of course, now the argument is that everybody has their own facts, and they're often inconsistent. And, in fact, fact is not the word that should be applied to them, but essentially assertions or beliefs that are masquerading as facts. And it is certainly true that you can, you know, I wrote this book a couple of years ago. It was a kind of comic book manifesto history of the media. And in it, I talk about one of the examples I give of this sort of fact-mongering was Lou Dobbs suggesting that Mexican immigrants had led to an increase in leprosy, which, you know, A, was not true, and B, there was no increase in leprosy. Well, there was a brief blip at one point, you know, back 20 years ago when there were a lot of immigrants from Southeast Asia. But, I mean, a teeny little blip that immediately went away and had nothing to do with an immigration policy. But he just said, we don't make up our own facts. And the fact is he had. He had willfully misunderstood facts that had come out, changed years, transposed things. I think he may not have made the mistakes consciously, but he believed his mistakes because they fit his thesis. And that's what we do all the time. And trust is the hardest thing to maintain. And in the biggest change between now and 20 years ago is disclosure, I think, builds trust much more than pretending to be completely non-judgmental about the material you're talking about. As a reporter, you become expert in certain things, and you do develop perspectives, and that perspective is something that one can uniquely present.
Well, thank you so much for the call, Joe. And I want to take a look ahead at this week's episode of On the Media.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand you have Craig Silverman of the Regret the Error blog
yes.
on. You also have Cindy Lauper on.
yes.
And I'm curious about that. How did Cindy Lauper wind up on the Media?
Okay. Well, that's an interesting story. I was doing a series of discussions in the green space. And we define media very broadly. We have a bunch of stories that we call enabling conditions, things that enable you to do journalism. And so we care about First Amendment issues, and we care about freedom of expression, and we care about too much secrecy, not enough disclosure, freedom of expression and freedom of information. We also care about culture, the collision of culture and news, and also how various cultural products get filtered through the era or the technology that they're in. And here's how we get to Cindy Lauper, who basically I just wanted to talk to right before her show came out. But she talked a lot about being a woman in the business back in the 80s and, you know, how to present one's self completely and not in the box that the other people in the business wanted to put you in. I mean, she was and continues to be an incredibly iconoclastic character. She is an original, And she was being told to dress this way and that. And, you know, she responded by, you know, dyeing her hair orange or green and speaking frankly about sexuality and all of these things. But she was rough and raw around the edges. I mean, Madonna did it as a kind of commercial principle, and Cindy did it as a kind of, well, I don't want to say anything rude on Wisconsin Public Radio, but as a response to the pressures of the male-dominated music business at the time. And that's part of media.
She's definitely one of a kind, and we actually, as a teaser for your show, we've got a little clip from it. Let's listen.
Okay.
I was signed by this German company. They said to me, we're going to make you into the next Streisand. And I looked at him. I said, what do you want to do that for? I said, what kind of lobotomy do I need? I said, listen, why don't you find somebody else and do that? And I think everybody at the table choked because he happened to be the president. But you know what? If you can't be honest, why do you want to live a life where, and why would you suffer so long to finally get to a place where you couldn't tell the truth and be yourself in the arts and in music?
Clip there from Brooke Gladstone's interview with Cyndi Lauper.
That says it all.
It really does. And we'll hear the whole thing coming up after 6 o'clock. And in our last minute or so, Brooke, I want to ask you, you've got a pretty full life, it sounds like. I heard that your band played at the NPR holiday party recently. True or false?
Well, that was last year.
Last year.
This year, I got to play Marley in the WNYC WQXR radio play of A Christmas Carol. So I gave up my... I decided I didn't have enough time to do that, the show and the band this year. But I'll be back next year.
But you're in a band.
I'm a theater major.
You're in a band, huh?
It's the WNYC Radio Flyers Band.
I see. Well, I'm looking forward to having you on the WPR lineup on Friday nights, and I want to thank you so much for talking with us today.
And I want to thank you so much for putting us there.
We're talking to Brooke Gladstone, co-host and managing editor of NPR's On the Media.